Your life is your greatest work of art, and it all relates back to the synchronicities. Welcome to Integrate Yourself, everybody. I'm your host, Allison Pillow, and you can find me at finallythrivingbook.com. You can find my book there. You can find my audiobook there, as well as amazing resources from the book, like meditations and vocal toning sessions and movements that I refer to in the book that you can refer to through the website and integrate into your life by practicing it. That's why I put them on the website, so that you would have some really good resources for being able to practice that in your life. So if you want to order my book or the audiobook, you can go there to do that and find out more information about the book as well. If you're interested in my coaching services, you can go to AllisonPillow.com and find my services there. I am currently getting ready to start a new Finally Thriving program class, which begins August 21st. And in this class, we explore our creativity through our wellness practice. If you were to take care of yourself and prioritize your time and get clear on where you wanted to put your energy and your focus and your time every day, what would that create? And health is directly linked to that. So in my opinion, we don't really honor that about ourselves. We don't honor our creative expression so much, but suppressing that within ourselves really suppresses our joy. It suppresses our health. It's a way of getting healthier. And you set the foundation up for that with your self-care wellness practice. So that's the key to living an abundant and beautiful life that's full of health and wealth. So we want to first train our mind to think more optimistically. For example, is my life working for me or against me? Am I looking at the glass half full, half empty, or overflowing? So you look at that first. What is your default state of mind? And then from there, we learn about our intentions. We discover what our intention is for our life, and then our values, which are very foundational, because once you've discovered your value system, this is going to set the stage for you to really create everything you want in your life based on those values. That's why it's so important to know what those are. So this is how you get to know yourself better. And you also, like I said, look at your default state of mind and get clear on that. That's going to help you direct your energy and your focus where you're not getting depleted all the time by reacting and surviving in life. Sometimes that can feel very chaotic. It can feel like a lot of anxiety in ourselves. We can feel panicked, but we can just really take care of that when we get to know ourselves better and really get to the root of what's creating that anxiety. And that can be different things for different people. So this evokes pure creativity, creating from a non-distorted place where we're wounded still and we're still creating from that place. I had a question the other day on a podcast interview that I was on about how come so many people create so many wonderful things from woundedness, from suffering. And that's very true. There's many beautiful things that get created from that because, again, creative expression is a way to work on those things from within and express them outside of ourselves so we don't hold them in. And there's a way to do it through joy and through an unwounded place where we are healthy and we are discovering our joy, and we're learning how to be more of an intentional creator being in our life. So your creative potential doesn't have to come from a place of suffering, although we do learn in life and we take those lessons and we apply them to what we create, based on what we learn from those lessons in our life. And that's beautiful. And you can still do that without always depending on that suffering or the victimhood mentality or the wounded place within yourself to create your life. You can do it through joy. You can do it through beauty. You can do it through bliss. You can do it through just inspired action to share what you're insights are with more people, whether it's through writing, whether it is through singing, acting, being a fitness coach, being a life coach, any of those things. They're very creative. Those are just a few of the many that you can take and express yourself by serving other people that way too. It's about serving other people. So if you're healthy, you're whole, you're going to be able to do that so much better. So some of us think we're not creative people, and I'm here to tell you that we're all creative people. You know, everybody's creative. We're all here to create. What your life is what you created. So you're already doing it. You might just not realize it. So what if you were to create your life with more intention and you felt really good in your body? You felt really clear on what you were here to do. Those are the things that we explore in the Finally Thriving program. And this will guide you toward what really matters most in your life. So that's the most important, is getting clear on that, because sometimes it can feel very confusing about what we want to focus on. There's so many distractions in the world, but we want to get clear on what is most important to us as an individual and move towards that through our daily practices, how we prioritize ourselves, how we put our schedule together, what's on your calendar. You know, are there things that you can take off your calendar to make your life a little less busy? Are you being busy out of the need to feel important and those kinds of things? Those are questions we ask in the class. Or do you have things on your calendar that you're really excited about? Are you really excited when you wake up in the morning and you are so excited and in wonder about what you're going to create that day and who you're going to connect with and all of those things and what you're going to see and experience? That is the shift we want to make as well. So getting back to what you want to put your time, energy, and focus on, again, this is going to help us with our own energy so we don't get depleted all the time. It's going to give you more energy when you're able to get clear on that. It's going to help your body regenerate much faster and recover from whatever you're doing, from your workouts, from your work. If you're doing a lot of things on the computer, or if you're writing a lot, using a lot of brain energy, speaking, those kinds of things as well, this is going to really help you recover your own energy again. Even being a parent, this can make you a better parent because you know yourself better. So you're not going to project, you know, what that's our biggest fear as parents is projecting what our parents taught us or what we experienced from our own parents onto our kids. And we can easily avoid this by just working on ourselves and discovering what is there to be resolved. Because otherwise, we're just reacting and surviving in our lives, and that's just not thriving. So in order to thrive, we want to explore what's really there. What is the root of why you're feeling anxious, of why you feel like you have to react, of why you feel like your life is chaotic, or you're not creating the life that you really want? Like, what's happening there? Ask those questions. Why is this happening, and what can I do about it? Where can I take small steps in my life every day to create more of what I want to see in my life and how I want to feel? So when we do this work together, we get to wake up with wonder about what we'll create each day. You get to be in the driver's seat of your life, and you get to be excited about your life when you have the foundation and the structure to do that. So we start with defining our intention for our time together. And I teach you how to create an intention. And then we look at our value system. Like, do we even know what we value in our life? That can be also a question, because maybe if you're running on other people's values or what you think you should value in your life, this can also be very confusing when we haven't defined it for ourselves yet. And so that's a very important step. And then looking at your default state of mind, what are you thinking most of the time? Are you thinking, I shouldn't, wouldn't, couldn't, can't? Are you saying that to yourself a lot? Or are you saying more things like, I get to, I'm really excited about, I want to do this? You know, that's more of a creatorship kind of way to talk to yourself. That's an architecture way. You're building something there. Whereas when you're saying you can't, you shouldn't, you couldn't, that's conflict language. So you're conflicting what you really want. It's conflicting with what you truly desire to create in your life. And you're in a way sabotaging yourself. So I went through this myself, and this is why I developed the course from the book. I wanted to help people go deeper into that. But if you want to get an idea of what this work is like, just grab my book first, read through it. If you feel like you want to go deeper into that, set up a free call with me, and we can talk about what your needs are, what you're specifically working on, and get you signed up if it's a good fit. So I always recommend just buying the book first or the audiobook and getting a taste of it and seeing how that lands with you. And if you love it, then we can definitely go further with it. So I invite you all to be a part of that next class, August 21st this year. And it's going to be amazing. We're going to have so much fun together. 12-week course and coaching program. You get a module every week. You get coaching with me every week, live group coaching. We have 4 guest speakers that are amazing. One that does breath work, one that does voice work, another person who's about wealth and health. And then finally, we have another person who's going to teach you about your spirit and how to hone into your inner knowing, your intuition. We're going to get into all that in the class. It's going to be so much fun to do that together. So if you want to join, set up a free call with me and we can get you signed up. So today, my guest is Dr. Nathan Riley. He's a holistic OBGYN, and he's an amazing, amazing practitioner. He's taken his work to the next level as a doctor. He is now helping people with the birthing process in the most natural way, and helping people understand really everything that is sacred about birth, and helping them make really good informed choices about how they want to move forward with it and their perspective on it. I really love talking to Nathan. He is an incredible speaker. He has so much insight and wisdom to share about the birthing process. He understands life from a holistic lens, and I loved our conversation so much. And I hope you get as much out of this conversation as I did. And if you want to sign up for Nathan's class, I highly recommend it. If you are having a baby and you're not really sure about what is to come, or if you have questions about the process, he is the person to get in touch with. So sign up for his Born Free Method class. I'll say one more thing about Nathan. He's really good at helping people understand what's natural as it relates to birth. And he does support, as he explains in the show, when we have to do things like C-sections or get some medical intervention into the birthing process. But really, there's so much self-development and growth that comes with being a parent. And it's not just about the birthing process. It's so much more after that, but really you're kind of setting the stage for everything by how you perceive the birthing process and how you experience it. I also share my own story of my birth of my first son in this episode, and how it affected me and my life as well, and what I learned from it. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Without further ado, it is my honor and my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Nathan Riley. Everybody, enjoy. Your life is your greatest work of art, and it all relates back to the synchronicity. Today, I'm here with a very special guest, Dr. Nathan Riley. He is an MD and a
Yeah.
Fellow of ACOG, thank you, has a truly holistic OBGYN practice upholding natural healing and the midwifery care model of birth. He brings a fresh perspective to natural fertility awareness, natural birth, family planning, and what mothers and fathers can do to have a sacred birth. Thank you so much, Nathan, for coming on. We've been connected for some time now, and it's so nice to get to just talk with you one-on-one about all this stuff.
It is a huge honor. I feel like if you're invited onto Allison's podcast, you're doing something right. And one of the threads that kind of binds us is the Czech Institute, the Czech family. A lot of the people that you and I engage with regularly are either they've trained with the Czech Institute or they have some experience working with Paul or Angie as clients or whatever else. And I want to give them a shout out because I would never have been able to do what I'm doing now without their support. And I was their sort of impromptu doctor for their second birth. And we got to know each other and have become dear friends ever since. And I've met outstanding people through that world. And you're just another example of that. So thank you. Thank you for having me and letting me share my story a little bit today.
Oh, thank you, Nathan. Yes, same here. I feel the same. You're wonderful. And I'm so, so grateful to be connected with you. Before we get into what we're going to talk about today, can you share a little bit more, expand on your story, how you got into this sacred work around the birthing process? Because that's really what you're doing. And you're doing it very differently than a standard OBGYN would do it. So I would love for you to share more about that with my audience. Self-care is finally a cultural phenomenon. The hashtag self-care has appeared on social media millions of times. So why aren't we applying it to our health and wellness? Instead, we beat ourselves up for not finding time to exercise, or we work out so hard that we suffer from joint and back pain. We struggle with diet, stress, and insomnia. That kind of health and wellness just isn't relaxing. It isn't joyful, and it definitely doesn't feel like self-care. Finally Thriving invites wellness into your life in a whole new way, bringing genuine self-care to your health and wellness routine. Learn how true self-care actually helps your body regenerate. Discover quick, simple exercises that build strength and flexibility, powerfully but gently, with hidden treasures along the way. Journal prompts, breathing exercises, relaxing meditations, and more. Merge your physical, mental, and spiritual wellness into one with Finally Thriving, and embrace a self-care wellness routine that will nourish every aspect of your life. If you want to pick up a copy of my book, Finally Thriving, head over to the link in my show notes. You can get it on Amazon. You can pick it up as an ebook or audiobook. It's available there too. And if you want to dive deeper with me, you can head over to my wait list link and join the wait list for the Finally Thriving program, where we dive deeper into these aspects and learn more about ourselves. It's a 3-month course and coaching program, and you get coaching from me every week. If you're ready to finally thrive, you can pick up a copy of my book or listen on audiobook, and this is going to take you through all the things, all the steps that I've brought my clients through and myself over 20 years of coaching, holistic health, wellness, and holistic healing. This is wisdom that will last you a lifetime. So follow the link on my show notes to pick up your copy of Finally Thriving so you can finally thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think most people, when they hear the term OBGYN, the images of white coats and blood work and ultrasounds and hospitals and sterility and all of that stuff comes to mind, because for many women nowadays, they're still having babies under the care of an OBGYN. And that care looks in a certain way. It has a sort of, there's a motif there. And that's a lot of controlling aspects of nature. You know, in a clinical or hospital setting, that doesn't necessarily feel great, but it's kind of what we've got. That's what people say. Don't, you know, it's safe there. It's all these things. Well, my story as an obstetrician, so OBGYNs do two things. We do women's health through the gynecology lens, and we do birth care, pregnancy and postpartum care, and we attend childbirth. For roughly 99% of babies are under that care. And when I was in medical school, everybody has that moment where they get to, you know, quote, deliver a baby. It's not a pizza. You don't deliver a baby. You're there to catch the baby to make sure the baby doesn't hit the ground. But when you're paying attention, you're like, oh my gosh, what a vulnerable space to be in. This woman has her legs open in stirrups, yeah, flat on her back. A baby is emerging from what previous to that was a sexual organ. You know, it's a woman's, it's a vagina, which is the inside, guys. The vulva is on the outside. There's this opening, a baby is emerging, and then the opening closes, and now there's this living thing on her chest, hopefully. And hopefully on her chest, not on like a booty warmer across the room.
Right. And
when you're there with that, you're like, whoa, there's like a mystique around this. This is really, really compelling stuff. Whereas elsewhere in medicine, you always have like the answer, you know, oh, the kidneys show that they're dysfunctional in this way, and the images show this, or the biopsy shows this. There's no answer to birth. And that mystique is really what propelled me into the field. And, you know, the story I tell time and time again is that then that mystique starts to like kind of dissipate. And now you're kind of the person controlling nature, just like farmers were forced to accept controlling how their yields and their corn rows were going by adding fertilizer and trying to implement these various technologies with tilling and whatever, you know, pesticides, whatever it is. And I wasn't okay with that. I kind of felt like there's a mystery here. Like, where's the mystery? Can't we be curious? And that was never really incentivized for me. And it's not to the discredit necessarily of the medical industrial complex. It was maybe me just being extra curious and really being thoughtful and compassionate around this thing that I still would never have an answer to as a man. And fast forward, I've done, I did my residency, I did my fellowship, which is an end of, you know, hospice and palliative medicine. And I maintained that little kernel of like Nathan Riley-ness. There was something about this that I was going to hold near and dear, and I was going to explore and investigate and be thoughtful and contemplative about this process for the rest of my life. And so I preserved that kernel. And it wasn't until, you know, fast forward, I've done all the Czech training, I've done biogeometry training, I've done all these herbalism training, I've done all this stuff. I've met so many great people like you in the field who've given me different language to talk about divinity around the human experience and Steiner's work from the physical, etheric, astral to spiritual. I have all this language now. I actually recently started studying anthroposophic medicine, which made me optimistic again. Because what anthroposophic medicine does is it starts with the question of what is life?
Oh, yeah.
And we're not talking about abortion. We're talking about like what is different between a plant and a rock? That's actually where you start your training in this extension of allopathic medicine, which is, you know, from Steiner's work, anthroposophic medicine. And if you can't answer the question as to what makes the plant alive and the rock not alive, how are we supposed to attend to something way more complex than rocks or plants, which is the human organism? We've jumped over animals altogether. We are human beings. We have so much breath in how we interact with our environment that to simplify birth to a medical procedure never sat well. Finding anthroposophic medicine now gave me new language and new insights into how I could sort of show up in a more well-rounded way as a human being caring for another human being. Contrast that study of what is life with medical training, where you start day one. My day one was opening up a cadaver and looking at her internal organs. She happened to have died from ovarian cancer, and she had gotten all this chemo, and her insides were completely plastered. All of this sort of sticky, sort of former living tumor growth in her belly. And we're now trying to understand the human body from a dead rock, mm-hmm, essentially.
Yeah.
And then, you know, images, the spatial imaging, it's not a living thing you're looking at. You're not looking, right, at a dynamic system. Blood work. It would be like trying to do surgery on a stream. Everything is changing moment to moment, nanosecond by nanosecond. Biopsies. It's a piece of dead tissue. We can't understand the human experience looking at dead tissue. We have to look at it as a biodynamic organism. And so that's really kind of brought me full circle to be given permission to be more curious again and to go back to the very fundamentals of like, why are you alive and why is this person not alive? What the hell is the difference there? And that really means so much in attending to birth. And I know you've had a couple kids, so maybe you can share some reflections on your own births and we can, you know, start there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's so much that you said right there that I want to touch upon. And I will say that, you know, I had the unique experience of working on a cadaver in college as well. And I went to a school called Radford University, and it used to be a nursing school. And then they got these cadavers that were donated to them. And being in the pre-physical therapy program, I don't know why we got to work on cadavers, but for some reason we did in our anatomy class. And yeah, it was like an older woman who had passed, and her uterus was tiny. It was like that big. I was like, that does, like, what? You know? And so, yes, like you're saying, I agree with you. It's like you're seeing things in a static state, and they're not really, there isn't that life force energy there. And that's what we need to be looking at it more from that perspective instead of the static state, which I think the medical industry does so much. It's like they're studying something that doesn't have any life in it. That doesn't make sense. So there's that's one thing I wanted to point out. And then the other thing was, go ahead.
The organs that expands and contracts on a regular basis, not rythmically throughout your whole lifetime, but periods of time, there's this incredible expansion and contraction, just like the human heart. But we treat it as this, like a part of the car, you know, like this is your womb space. This is a valuable organ. And it only looked that big when you look at a woman, but in pregnancy, it's like this big. How is that possible?
I know. That's what I thought. I was like, whoa, it can expand that much. Oh my God. You know, that was really, really interesting to see. So from that, it was valuable for me to see what everything looked like from the inside, you know, like that was a unique experience. And then you brought up the, early on, you were saying that you had experience with palliative care. You had training there. And it just reminds me of when my dad passed away a couple of years ago. I think the 22nd is actually February 22nd, 2020 is when he passed away. So we're almost, I don't know what today is, but we're close. We're somewhere in that realm. So, so it's really interesting that we're talking about this today, because I think what came to me when I was there for him and helped him pass, it felt like a birth, like the birthing process, you know? So it was like the same side two different sides of the same coin. And I was like, wow, okay, this is a sacred moment. Just as birthing is a sacred moment, we're helping someone transition into the next dimension of reality, right? And so that makes sense that you would have that kind of training as well. As you were sharing that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But to most people, it might not, because birth and death seem like so opposite to each other. But I feel like they're very similar, you know. But we don't get to, you know, it is kind of normal to be around a birth, you know, like you can be, you witness it now. It's very accessible to do that. Death, not so much, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't get the opportunity to have that sacred moment around somebody who's dying. So I just thought I'd bring that up, because that was really interesting, that you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously feel the same way. There was something compelling about having lost my own father. I was in medical school when he passed away. He was being treated for multiple myeloma, which is a type of bone marrow originating cancer. And it just riddles the body with all sorts of tumors in the bones. And I mean, it's a nightmare. And I remember my dad, who was this big, I grew up in Pittsburgh. He was this big rust belt kind of blue collar worker. He was always this towering giant to me. And as I saw him dying over years, he became big enough for me to carry him like a baby into the bathroom and put him on the toilet. This big guy with all this muscle and big bones and big sausage fingers. And I think that that imprinted on me something as well. You know, when you're with a person in their final moments of dying, I actually think you can do quite a bit of harm by interfering in that process. You know, we may not have the language for it, but there is a sense that if I get in the way of the hard work that my loved one is doing right now in the dying process, I could potentially set them up for some harm in whatever comes after that. You know, the Buddhists would say, you know, they can't live out their dharma if you interfere with that process of suffering. And suffering has a broad, you know, scope of meaning. But in that regard, you don't give opioids to a practicing Buddhist at the end of life, because the opioids, like morphine or whatever, detaches them from the process of dying. I mean, Right. Literally, it dissociates you from it. So what if we looked at birth the same way? What if we intervene, you know, through the lens of Stan Grof? He has this perinatal matrices theory. And Stan Grof was really famous for his work, his collaborative work with Joan Halifax, who later became a Tibetan Buddhist monk. They were using LSD for end of life, and they collected all this data, but it was right in the 60s when suddenly there was this kibosh on LSD and the other psychedelics. So his work was really, really pivotal for me at the end of life. But then I started investigating further, and he actually was also thinking about birth. So this guy was doing both. And I think he was a psychiatrist, if I recall. I can't recall completely, but it doesn't really matter what your specialty is. You can dabble in things, as I have.
Right.
But in birth, Stan Grof had this theory that, okay, you're inside this amniotic universe, everything's fine. And then stuff starts closing in on you because you're getting bigger and the space is only so big and there's no way out. Like, how traumatizing is that, you know, to be trapped? And then suddenly a little light opens up at the end of the tunnel, and those cosmic oppressive forces you start to grapple with. If I don't get to that light, I'm going to die. And so you do die, but you re-emerge as a human being. No, that's not to say you're not a human inside the womb, but this is a thought experiment. After that, those cosmic oppressive forces are resolved and you go through this death rebirth cycle, you emerge now in the Earth School, and you've got 90 years or so to do whatever you're here to do. Not that that's like your life purpose. It could mean that, but it's actually far greater than that. Why are you here? Why are you alive? Why are you different from the plants? It goes back into what I was saying before. And if we think about that in the reverse direction in death, and then actually you emerge, you see the light and you go towards the light, like it's kind of this repeated cycle.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we overlap birth and death? Like, these are two incredibly important points in our life. And I have the privilege of being able to sit and perhaps contemplate and maybe eventually write something about it in the future. I think everybody's a little too quick to write their books. Like, I need 30 minutes with this before I can actually say anything that's super profound. But there is definitely the essence of birth in death and vice versa. And I don't know if death is the beginning or death is the end. You'd have to say of what, and
yeah.
That's the next question is, like, what happens when we die? Where did we come from when we were born? Just so many great questions come out of that. And the exercise through these curious questions, I think, is what makes this work so interesting for anybody in the wellness space. Like, this is really where it's at. It's not your carbs and your calories and all that. It's like, what the hell, why am I alive? Like, what am I doing here? How am I going to stay alive? And at some point, I'm not going to be alive anymore. Why does that happen?
Right. No, those are the big questions. I know that's what I've been, you know, it's what's been driving me for so long. And I don't understand sometimes why people aren't curious about that. You know, it's like, why wouldn't you be, you know? They're very similar. If we really think about it, they're very similar and sacred and much alike, birth and death process. I want to talk, because your specialty is the birth process. You know, you're there for people and you hold space and you explain it. When I heard you talking about this on Amy Fournier's show, Awakening Aphrodite, you were saying, you know, we were having a discussion, we were on a panel together, and talking about how you're doing less actually as a OBGYN and practitioner, and letting the birthing process happen the way it needs to happen for that person, for the baby. And I love that because my own birthing process with my two kids, like the first time I was really young, like we were talking before the show, you'd mentioned I was primed for that. I was perfect age. I did feel like that, but I also felt like I was so naive about what was about to happen. I just didn't, and times were different. You know, it just was when I didn't, you know, have access to the things that are available now for women that are just amazing. So I just felt like a little bit in the dark. And I thought, I was an athlete, a gymnast for a long time. I thought this would be easy. You know, my mom had an easy time with her births, although she says that, but she was actually put to sleep for her birth. So that's a little different. You know, that's the way they did it back then. Yeah. She's like, oh, it was great. I'm like, I'm sure it was. So in my mind, I was like, this would be easy. What's that?
I'll add something to that when you're finished.
Okay. That's we could talk about that too. That's a whole nother can of worms there. But so for me, it was a very stressful. I'll say my first pregnancy was extremely stressful. I had, you know, from being a gymnast, real tight hips, it took me a really long time to dilate, and I was in a lot of pain, and I was in labor for about 24 hours. And they kept sending, I would go to the hospital and they'd send me home. They did that 3 times. And finally I was like, I'm not going home. I'm having this baby. And I started to scream because I was in so much pain. It really felt like I was being pulled from both directions, you know? And later I'm realizing that I was having back spasms. So that was, you know, not only was I in labor, I was also having back spasms, debilitating back spasms. But I'd never felt a back spasm before that. So I didn't know what was happening. I thought, oh, this is just part of labor and this is horrible. So there was all this stress. And then I was in the hospital and I started screaming and the nurse told me to shut up. And I was like, what? And yeah. And it really, and this relates to what my journey is now with voice, because, you know, I was really, you know, in that moment where I should have had every right to scream as loud as I wanted to, or make any noise that I needed to, because noises are a part of birth. Now that I've learned down the road, like those are actually, you know, a portal in a way, the sounds that you make through birthing as well, in order to help facilitate it. Cause we've been using these kind, you know, sounds, certain sounds forever with women. And so to have my voice just like censored like that, it just felt like, of course, I was young. I didn't know what to do. And then I just felt like so suppressed, and that made the birthing much worse. And so it just kind of kept going downhill from there. And then my water broke and I was in so much pain. They were like, I was like, please give me it. I didn't know much about chemicals and stuff back then. So I was, please give me an epidural. I'm in so much pain. And they're like, I'm not sure we can do that. But then they decided at the last minute to do it. And it, you know, of course, created a lot of issues for my lower spine later on too. So my first son came out with he had inhaled meconium. And of course, you know, there was so much stress going on. It makes sense that that would have happened. So right away, the respiratory therapist, which did a wonderful job, and I'm very grateful for them, they took him away and cleaned him out and saved his life because he wasn't breathing when he came out. And then he had to be in the NIC unit for 3 days. And so it was quite a stressful event. And part of me was very disconnected because I'd just gone through all of this with my body. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was hard for me to connect with my son right then because I'd gone through so much trauma and I just felt hollow, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I would say about a week later, it kicked in that, oh my God, okay, I can do this. You know, I'm doing this. Yes, I feel connected to my baby, but it took a good week. And I just was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, you know? So that was my first birthing experience. And, you know, I had taken Lamaze classes and all those things, but I didn't have a midwife, which if I were to do it all again, I would have hired a midwife for sure and done it differently. But again, we go through these things because we're supposed to, you know? And so I honor that and I learned from it. And so, you know, that was my experience, but I will say that the way you describe a lot of the people that you work with, it sounds like so much more joyful. And you talk about oxytocin that gets produced is what creates that love and that joy in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love to for you to share more about that as well and how that makes the experience different than like a very stressful experience, which is more of a medical procedure experience, right? Is what it felt like for me.
Yeah. I'm taking notes here because you brought up so many great points. I mean, in just that story alone, there's so much to talk about. And for anybody listening, I don't want anybody ever to hear stories and then feel bad about how their birth went. You know, one of the most important things that you said is, hey, it all happened to me for that in that way for some reason. I really believe that. I really believe that despite every one of your efforts, sometimes things just aren't going to go the way that you thought or hoped or dreamt that they would. That doesn't mean it was a bad birth. It's just like a psychedelic journey. If you've ever done a dose of mushrooms or LSD or even in some really deep certain breath work practices, it may be hard, but it wasn't like that sucked or what a bad trip it was or whatever else. You were taken through that experience for all of the right reasons. And so that's not diminishing how hard it was for you, Allison, or anybody out there listening. You know, even Angie Check, who we're both familiar with, and I was her doctor, she ended up with a repeat C-section after desiring a home birth, vaginal birth after a prior C-section, had a midwife, had it all done right. She was in labor for like 36 hours.
Oh,
and
wow.
it just didn't happen. Like the baby was like, I'm not doing it. And I,
yeah, that's what I feel like is going on. You said that perfectly, that it's the baby's, the baby is deciding how they want to come out. Right.
Yeah. I had this really interesting experience with a client one time who had gone into a regression therapy with her therapist. And, she was struggling with having had a C-section and she was beating herself up over it. And how did this happen? I did all the right things, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a lot that's not in your control. So in this therapy session, she actually managed to somehow go into the womb with her baby, which had already been born. So she was back in there. The baby was indicating into the pelvis. I didn't want to go through there. And she looks down into her own pelvis, sitting next to her fetus inside the womb, and sees like what she described as like cobwebs and like a dark, damp cellar. Like it just didn't look like a safe place to go through. So the baby said, I had to come out the other way.
Oh, and, wow.
And it turns out, yeah, from this regression therapy session, she apparently had a whole bunch of sexual abuse in her childhood that had never been, opened up, you know, it was repressed and it was stored. I don't know what we say. We can use all this funny language that says we've read fancy books and whatnot. Nobody really fucking knows. Sorry for cursing.
No, it's okay.
Something stored in her body. And the baby knew that. And the baby was saying, Mama, I'm not going through there. I got to come out the other way. So if you ended up with a C-section, it has nothing to do with you. Now, if you maybe aren't working with a Czech coach or holistic lifestyle coach or a doctor like me who has some understanding of how we can dial in your diet, your movement, your breathing, your hydration, your mindset, your sleep. Those are all things that are in your control. And if you haven't done any of those and you develop gestational diabetes and your baby's having a hard time or whatever, maybe we could have done something better, but it's also water under the bridge. There's no shame there. It's the birth that you had. And hopefully there is some silver lining. There's a lesson to be taken from that. That story that I told you about the baby that didn't want to go through that pelvis that had all this, you know, whatever you want to call it, the energetic bad juju, whatever you want to call it. That story is actually like a medicine story for so many people that come into my practice because it wasn't your fault. It probably is never anybody's fault when they have a C-section. We also have a medical industrial complex that is probably too has too low of a threshold to do surgery. But all of that aside, yeah. even when women go full in on healthy lifestyle, and they have all the money in the world and they want to have the best doctor, best midwife, sometimes things just don't go the way that you want it to. And there is always a story. There's always some unknown reason that maybe you won't even know until you're on your deathbed and something comes to you, this epiphany, you get a signal from afar, and that's okay too. But there's where this curiosity comes from. It's not just doctors are bad and they do C-sections. Sometimes babies have actually the say in this. And that's that.
Yeah. That's how it goes. I love that you said that. That makes so much sense to me. Yeah, because there's so many other energetic components. I mean, why wouldn't it be? This is birth, you know? This is a huge deal, you know? Yeah,
why not? We don't know even what causes labor, Allison. We don't even know what starts labor, let alone why a baby would decide I'm not going out through the vagina. And you know, for those women out there, sometimes babies die in childbirth as well. And it could be that the baby was unfit for the process. I think that that actually is a part of being mortal, and that's not a popular opinion. But furthermore, for women who are abjectly refusing C-section, their baby might say, okay, I'm going to leave and come back when we can do this a different way because I'm not going through there for whatever reason. So the baby died in the childbirth process. We blame it on the woman for making a bad decision or the doctors for not doing the right surgery or whatever else, when it could have just been the baby had this plan all along. I'm not going through there and I'll just come back when you're ready to do this right, because I'm not going through that pelvis. Who knows? Who knows? This is why this is cool. Like it's not, I don't want to say it's fun to think about because nobody wants to have to honor a passing baby. Like, God, what a traumatic, horrible thing to go through. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not, you don't have that say. Like, we like to think that you're in charge, you know, through our reductive lens of childbirth, but there's a lot we don't know. And that does make this a little bit more interesting and fun to kind of pontificate.
Absolutely. Yeah. We don't think of babies as being pure energy, you know, pure consciousness coming in. They know already what's going on, probably better than we do. And I have worked with clients before who've lost babies during childbirth or before. And then they have another soul that wants to come in and very successfully. So that does happen. I see what you're saying there. Yeah, I've seen that happen. And through, I mean, my practice is different than yours, of course, but the people that I work with are, you know, there was a stretch of time where I was working with a lot of women that were trying to get pregnant. And then that happened to a few of them, and it was really heartbreaking, but also it allowed them to create the space to grow during that span of time. And then another soul hopped in and presented themselves. So that was really beautiful too. Yeah,
totally. And I think a lot of women, more so than men, because they're growing a baby, like they're starting to get little inklings. Their intuition starts kicking in again when they get pregnant, and all of that conditioning that they've been told, you know, we know best, we know the images show this and the labs show this and the ultrasound or whatever shows this. A lot of women are pushing back on that because their intuition is telling them, I don't know if that's the right way to do it. Their baby, they are in communication with their baby at all times. And it's not going to come to you like a text message necessarily. It's going to be a feeling in your solar plexus, in your gut. Something's not right about this. When that intuition is dismissed, let's say a doctor comes in and says, I'm sorry, I have to check your baby. And the woman says, no, I don't want your hands in there. And they say, we have to do it for the baby. And they force your legs open, pull your legs up to your shoulder. The partner's asked to be, you know, complicit in this process, that also can lead to a lot of trauma. So there's a lot of trauma happening in this space, not just in how we give birth, but also the way that the system, I'm using air quotes on my end, treats this as a medical procedure. So there's a lot of women that you may have met them. A lot of my friends, even my wife, wasn't really thrilled with her first birth, which was an undisturbed, so to speak, unmedicated natural birth in the hospital. The second was at home, and it was actually very healing. But there was something about the experience. I got the sense hearing her tell her birth story and sort of finding some closure to that, that like she didn't really feel witnessed in that process. Her intuition wasn't necessarily treat it as authoritative knowledge. And something about, I'm putting words in her mouth, but I've heard this from so many other women.
Oh, I felt that way as well. Yeah.
And I got a little hint of that from your story. When mm-hmm. we aren't treating women as the sacred power spots that they are, they're about to bring a baby into the world. When we're not treating that as more of a sacred unfolding, as opposed to treating it like a medical procedure, a lot of trauma is happening there. So we have generations of women now who are having babies in the hands of good intentioned midwives and doctors, but they're not really being present and bearing witness to what this person that they're there to care for. They took an oath to care for. They're not really bearing witness to that. They're just focused on the physical reality. A baby's coming out, heart rates, blood work, blah, 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 all that stuff. And they lose the big picture. And when we lose that big picture, I think women leave the experience feeling like something wasn't right.
Yeah.
So that's what I do in my practice. Actually, a big part of my work in Beloved Holistics is helping people to reclaim their power. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with being pregnant. But if you take responsibility for your actions, what is controllable, you also have to accept the outcomes. If you've done everything in your power, then the outcomes actually aren't important. You can just do your very best. And that is a deconditioning process when women find themselves pregnant, in your case, at age 28. You find yourself pregnant, and suddenly now you have to make decisions that are going to last this entire lifetime for this child, and perhaps the lifetime of their children, through genetic imprinting or epigenetics, transgenerational trauma being passed down, all of that stuff. So there's a lot more to this than what does the ultrasound show and what does your doctor have to say? What do you feel inside? And whatever you feel, you have to be prepared to act on, because nobody's going to take care of this baby later. You are going to be. So let's start practicing saying no. Let's start practicing saying fuck yes when things just feel right or wrong.
I love that. Yeah. That's something I've just now started doing in my life, and I'm 50. So,
Me too. Like just the other day, I was like, this doesn't feel right. I'm going to not do this thing anymore. But is that okay? You have to get permission from somebody out there, I guess, to do the
right
thing we know we need. It's a journey. Everything is ceremony. This whole thing, we're all just trying to figure it out. There's nobody out there with the answer. You have the answer as much as anybody else. We're just here as doctors and midwives to provide you with additional information so that you can be sure about your decision and you can feel like you've turned over every rock possible from fertility all the way through parenting.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Nathan, on, because I believe that even if we have these experiences and some of it we have no control over, like you said, with the outcome, making peace with that and then healing the parts that need to be healed from that can actually help our kids that we've had and the trauma they may have experienced. I feel like by healing myself and going through taking these opportunities for self-growth, it actually the energy with them changes, they feel that too. And so if you have made mistakes as a parent or you feel like you've messed up, you can always rectify that, by changing the energy around it. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I was so deeply present with your words that I kind of lost the question, but I think I get the question because I live it every day. We've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and we had a home birth in our second, 50 feet from where I'm sitting. And from the moment that baby emerges, I'm going to just speak from the lens of a father. Not very many men are modeled what fatherhood actually means. You're not just the person in your household, perhaps, if it's let's say it's a traditional household. You've got the white picket fence, you've got a Porsche, and then you've got an SUV, whatever. And you're the breadwinner, you're the man, you're big and strong, you've taken care of your physique, you're a CrossFit, whatever, I don't know, whatever. You've got it all dialed in. Nobody ever tells you what it really means to be a dad, because all of that stuff is great. Being a provider for the family and being strong and not crying at every sad point in the movie, whatever you've been trained to do by your dad, your grandfather, all of the men in your life, fine. But when you are a dad, like now you are holding your baby and you're looking at them and they are screaming in your face and you have nothing to offer them except presence and grounding. Who the fuck is actually there for the dads? Like, who's actually helping us go through that?
Not many people. Yeah.
So I'm going to be launching a course in the coming months. I don't know when this episode's going to air, but it's called the Born Free Method. And there's a whole unit for the dads or the partners, because not every, you know, relationship is a man and a woman necessarily, but the person who's not carrying the baby has an extra diligence there, or there's an extra level of self-development and self-identification, because you're going to have to give a piece of you to this little baby who's going to call you dad literally for the rest of their life. It doesn't matter if you're an absentee or you're the most involved father in the world. You are their father and they're going to treat you like that. And what does that mean? It means learning how to slow down and be present with your kids and love them through the darkest times so that they know how to relate to other people when those other people are going through dark things. It's not stoicism. I don't care what Seneca and all those, you know, Ryan Holiday's book and Tim Ferriss and all that's like, stoicism is bullshit. It is a part of what is to be a father. Being stoic while a baby is screaming at you and feeling okay to be vulnerable with them and to cry when it's hard to your partner, to be able to be angry and frustrated and to actually emote, showing this child that you have the full range of emotions. You're not a statue out there lifting weights. You are a human being who's just doing your best. That modeling comes through in, there's a couple people in my life that I think have done it really well. I think Kyle Kingsbury is a dear friend of mine. He and I talk about parenting on a daily basis, and we're still both trying to figure out. But when I leave his house, I know that that guy has been through some really hard things, and he shows up with his kids in the most loving, kind, soft way. And the guy's 6'4", and he's built like a Greek god, but he can be so vulnerable and give you the best hugs and kisses that you've ever had. That's the type of work and the modeling that I'm trying to also provide dads in this space, because this is not just your woman is going to have a baby. This is way more than that. You are going through a spiritual transformation, an archetypal transformation, through and through. And if you're only worried about the moment of birth, which goes by like that,
yeah,
you're solely going to be sorely unprepared for having to give a piece of yourself for the first time to this little baby.
Yeah.
And so, so to answer your question, now that I've given this 4-hour diatribe,
I love it. Yeah.
Brief preface, I will say that your kids are going to learn how to know themselves. They're gonna better understand how to know other people, how to treat other people, and how to show up taking responsibility for themselves, their feelings, what they say, and the integrity that we're lacking in the world, the compassion that we're lacking in the world, being happy and confident in who you are. That is really, I think, at the forefront of my mind every time I have any interaction with my kids, because they're going to learn everything from me, including when it's okay to cry, when it's not okay to cry, when it's okay to smile, when it's okay to be unhappy, whatever. We need to be able to show up as our authentic selves and not give them some facade as to what a man or a woman for that matter is supposed to be. We are still sexual beings. We are still desperately in love with the person who gave birth to you, if you're, you know, looking from the lens of a father. And we are going to, like somebody like Kyle Kingsbury could walk in through the door. He will have to rip my fucking head off before he gets to my kids. Like, that is okay to also be very protective, but we need to give them we have to encourage them to be who they are, to explore and to continue to be curious and to see the world through a child's eyes. I actually think that's what we desperately need in the world.
Yeah. I agree with that so much. Yeah. It's being the role model for our kids, that we're just being ourselves. We're showing them how to be themselves, you know, but they don't know if we have put up a facade. It becomes very confusing for kids. They don't know, you know, it's very hard for them to decipher between what's real and what's not. And then when they get out into the world, it gets even more confusing. So it's better to be honest with your kids and put it out there, you know, but also be a parent too, you know, and find the balance there. Yeah. I mean, My husband has been, he's like the best dad. And he, you know, I just really am so grateful for him and the energy he brings to our two sons, and just has, you know, have there been some crazy moments? Have there been some bad moments? For sure. But that's part of life. And he teaches them that. And he's honest, you know, with them about things. And he's very understanding and compassionate. So, you know, he's helping them with all that. And sometimes, you know, for me, like having two sons, it was kind of like uncomfortable as a woman sometimes with some of the conflict, you know, that men have, you know, getting used to that. But then I realized, oh, it's a part of being a man, you know, they need to go through this and that's okay. And so, but yeah, the father role is so important, and it's even more, and a lot of men don't think it's important early on, but it is, like you said, I love how you put the presence and, just being there, you know, is important. It's really important.
Yeah. I'll also add, just because I think your listeners will appreciate this. I was at a breaking point at about 6 months. We have two little girls, by the way. So it's the same. I have this experience with the feminine energy and trying to figure out, dial in my yin and yang balance, you know, in order to show them that I'm not just a man. I also have a lot of feminine energy, and, you know, vice versa for you. But at about the 6 month mark, I was struggling with the idea that this kid is screaming it in my face and I can't do anything. I don't have breasts. I don't have mom's smell. I wasn't connected to this kid for 10 months in the uterus. What am I going to do? Well, that holding space thing was really hard because my monkey mind was going and I was tired. I was sleep deprived, but I was also just exhausted from not being able to help from the way I would conceive of helping somebody who's having a hard time. And I had to do a really deep medicine ceremony and came out of that. It was a very large dose of mushrooms, if you're curious. And was by myself and I was just going through it. And I had this image of being in a void where I had all of the knowledge that I could ever know, all the stuff I ever wanted to achieve, but I was alone in this space. And it was my ego just banging my head off of the wall, you know, and I had to reconcile that I was unwilling to give a piece of me to this child. Things change when you become a parent. And no, again, everybody's like, they just fit into your life or whatever else. And people think you're doing great because you have a podcast and your Instagram looks great. Like, it is really hard. And it's okay for you to have to do some deep inner reflective work, ideally before. That's the work I do with my clients. Like, I actually work as much with men as I do with their pregnant partners. But in this journey, I came out of it. And the first thing I saw when I opened my eyes, and my dog had like 8 eyeballs. I mean, I was like really in deep.
Wow.
I saw the bassinet in our bedroom and I just cried for like 4 hours. Like, how badly did I want to be a father to this little girl? And I can't give her any of my presence. So I always say my greatest currency with children is not time. It's not my job or the money. It's actually my presence with them. They want to be looking into you. They're not seeing your blue eyes. They're seeing you and all of your glory. What part of that do you want them to see? You need them to see all of it. And it required that medicine journey for me to really understand what fatherhood meant to me. And it was like 4 hours. And then I remember getting a load of laundry after I was coming down and I was folding her little underwear, her like reusable diapers. And I was just like, oh, it's such an honor to be able to fold these little diapers, you know? And even my wife was like, something has changed in you ever since that journey, but it doesn't get like I have it all figured out. It was just the initiation. Like, you said you were ready. Well, let's fucking go, man.
Yeah. It happens instantaneously.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that, Nathan. Yes, that is it. That is all there is. That is the most important aspect of being a parent I've learned over the years too, and it was really hard for me early on because I was tired too. And I was like stressed and, but then I was like, I'm not working anymore. I got to be present for them. And even then it was hard, you know? So for me, like, my life is just preparing that presence, and I still sometimes have a hard time with it, and I got to get out of my own thing and then be with them. That's all they want. They just want us to be present with them. in the moment, you know, and I remind myself of that constantly because that, you know, I remember not getting that as much when I was a kid too and how that felt. And so, you know, I do the best I can to do that for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Nathan. This has been an incredible conversation. We talked about a lot of different things, but I feel like this is going to give everybody so much value and insight, both on what you do, what you offer, and more on the birthing process and even the death process, you know, for people. Would you want to share, you did mention your course, which you're doing, is it through the Czech Institute? Is that where you're offering it or no? I thought maybe they were helping you promote it or something, or you were affiliated there somehow.
I have a course at the Czech Institute. It's my natural fertility course. That is up and available as we speak. It comes with a 150-page course manual, and the course is only like $130. But anybody out there who's struggling with fertility, that's where I send them first, because I don't have time to go through everything I've learned over all of these years. But most of it is actually incorporated there.
Okay,
my PRP fertility program is way more comprehensive. You meet with me and 7 other practitioners. It's a higher price point, but it's a fraction of the cost of IVF. So if you're with that as the only option, let's at least dial in your health so that A, maybe you can conceive naturally, likely, or B, if you end up going the IVF route, it's going to actually work. And you've dialed in all of the causes of your fertility challenges from the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual levels. The Czech fertility course is actually included in that price. You get access to it. So, there's so many other things. People can go to my website to learn more about that. That it's belovedholistics.com. The course that is going to be coming out is called the Born Free Method, which really we've scratched the surface, maybe 1/50th of what's covered in that course. But it starts with the deconditioning that you don't have any power or say in your life. And let's apply that new reclaimed power to what you have the ability to control in pregnancy through childbirth into postpartum. But it goes through everything, many, many, many scenarios that you could arise at within pregnancy and childbirth. Again, because I'm not available to counsel every single person through every pregnancy. I'm super busy. So this course will be available. It'll be at bornfreemethod.com. Both websites will be combined at bornfreemethod.com, but it's neither here nor there.
Wonderful. I heard you have some good music with that too.
Yeah, we've got a, who's a buddy of yours. He and Ian Morris actually are collaborating on the soundtrack. What I've told people is it's kind of like if you were to blend Kendrick Lamar with Beyonce with the Black Keys, you would have our soundtrack. It's pretty dope. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, so everything is available at my website. I also do work one-on-one with people who want pregnancy support. They just buy a package at my website. I also have health coaches that I work with. For some people, I just say, go and see Kirsty Pratt or, you know, whoever who's another Czech practitioner. She's actually, helps a lot with Paul and Angie's Instagram and all of that. I only work with people that I really trust their work. So if you go to my website, you'll see the types of people who are your people as well, but they're the best at what they do in the biz in their various specialties. So I'm not messing around. We're only doing what works here. We're not fluffing this up. We're not going to say, I took a weekend workshop and here's the 5 steps to doing whatever. Like, we're going to get to the heart of your issues, and we're going to at least try to nudge you onto the right path. Everything's a journey. And and that's that.
Fertility is a big one. And we didn't really get into that today, but we'll have to have you back on the show later to talk about that. Yeah, because that's a big one. Thank you so much, Nathan. I really appreciate you. And it was so nice to connect today and talk about some amazing things. Thank you.
My pleasure, Allison. Thank you. And to all of your audience out there, thank you for listening to good podcasts. There's a lot of junk out there. Allison's podcast is not junk. And it's a real honor that in being invited here to speak with you today.
Thank you, Nathan. You're amazing. You're the best. Can't wait to connect in person.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise.
All right. I believe bliss is a spiritual experience. And you can't find this without first learning how to play. Play. make mistakes, and have fun. Fun, fun, fun. But it's hard to experience bliss until you've learned how to surrender to what you cannot control. It's more fun to roll with life most times and, of course, control what you can, but let go, of what you cannot and hand that over to the universe or your higher self. Our joy lies in the idea that many times life does not unfold the way we always expect or plan. But it does unfold the way that is right for each of us, giving us exactly what we need without losing anything. Oftentimes, the result is even better than what we could have ever imagined, because we opened ourselves up to infinite possibility, Embracing the unknown in your life is like watching a good movie and waiting for the next clue as to what could come next with curiosity and excitement. What you discover along the way in your life is important. And it all relates back to you being able to see the beauty and bringing awareness to the synchronicities. Your life is your greatest work of art. We are all artists in that way. And you get to create your life any way you like. That's the fun part. And having fun, I believe, is a spiritual experience. Your life is your greatest work of art. And it all relates back to the synchronicities. And having fun, I believe, is a spiritual experience. And it all relates back to the synchronicities. Your life is your greatest work of art, and it all relates back to the synchronicities.